Gazelles. Great, great vibes coming out of the Stormers, and why not? Fantastic win against the Bulls. Got the season back on track. Dragons, Sunday, 3 o'clock. Ordinarily, people would say they haven't offered much, especially on the road. That's a gimme five-pointer. We've seen the Stormers slip up in the past against the Ospreys a couple of seasons ago. It is a weird time. The Stormers 23, the new team, which is the under 23, but seven players are allowed in that 23. Lovely to see Divi's making his debut for the under 23s at 40. That's great. Okay. Against the Seattle Seawolves, there's now a partnership between the two. That game kicks off after the Stormers game, but people want to know why. It's because there is a world triathlon in the morning between 8 and 12, and they run around the stadium. And the only time the Stormers can get in to start their preps for activation is at 12:30 on Sunday. There was no way to host that as a curtain raiser for anyone who asks. It is big URC weekend. We're going to get to the URC, but the big talking points always in this country, Zals, and I know you've got huge, huge, huge opinions on it. It's every time Rusty Erasmus names a alignment squad, be it virtual, meaning they're not here, they're on team meets, they're on Zoom calls, the overseas-based players, and he announces guys to be here in person. 49 guys came to Cape Town for 3 days. It was like the second coming. They all left rejuvenated, and I'll tell you one thing. We spoke to Nietas and to BJ Dixon and a few of the Stormers guys that night at the awards, and they said they're ready, and they certainly were. They went back and played like they hadn't played before for a while, and they beat the Bulls. So 49 guys there, 21 announced their overseas place, 16 of them double World Cup winners, most of them playing in Japan, which seems to extend those guys' careers wonderfully. Mm. When a national coach like Rusty Erasmus has identified 70 players, one, what are your chances of playing Test rugby this year? And what are your chances of actually making it to the big one, the big dance, 2027 World Cup in Australia, when they go for the historic three in a row and they go for a fifth overall title? Is it, if you're not in there, close shop, get to France, play top 14, or enjoy the URC, or is it, hang on a second, there could still be a bolter?
Mate, I think if you're in that 70-man squad, you have a way better chance of going to the World Cup final than if you're Irish. So I think you're in the money. You've got a good chance of getting there. And I think Rusty is just showing that he casts his net very wide. I'm not great at maths, but 23 players in a squad, match day squad. There's 70 guys in this group. That looks like roughly three match day squads. So he's casting his net wide. He's gone from Cape Town to Tokyo and casting that net. And I don't think there's a single player in this country that Rusty couldn't tell you something about. So he's got his eyes on everybody. We've seen in some of his selections in the past. He's even looked at the Varsity Cup, mate. So everybody is on the radar. He can't invite everybody to every camp. You couldn't have 600 players there at the workshop. But I think he's got his eye on some key guys. And I think there's a mix of players that come into these camps. Some of them are established two-time World Cup winners, like he mentioned. Some of these guys are new to the scene, and he wants to get to know the human, I suppose, behind the number. And other guys have been in and around, and he's just trying to maybe do a little bit of a catch-up with them. So I think there's a lot of information sharing and probably a little bit of evaluation around character. So all of these guys, none of us know who is going to get injured, who's going to be on form, who's going to be off form this season and leading up to the World Cup. We've got 13 tests this season. You've got 70 players here. Rusty doesn't change the whole squad every week, but a chunk of these guys are going to be in action this year. So the key is for the guys who are not sort of prime players in the 70 group, regular starters, is to be ready so that if a gap presents itself, you can take it.
Okay, we look at who's out from the 2026 squads. Vincent Koch, he's signed with the Sharks an extension to 2028. So he's saying, I've still got something in these legs and the shoulders.
Yeah.
Willie LaRue, he's out. And Bongi, he's out. Now, Bongi was called in for the last test when Malcolm Marx was unavailable, and he featured in the 73-0 win against Wales. And the message to him was, you're not totally out the mix, but he hasn't been included in the alignment camp. Rusty's counter to that always is, sometimes you don't have to bring a guy here who's been here for 9 years. You just have to call on
Precisely.
Him and kind of a guy that has been in and out and hasn't been there for the best part of 5 years. You want to bring him in and show him a few moves, etc. And this cultural thinking of the team. But if you look at those three guys, is it curtains for them? Realistically, because you look who's been brought in their place, and you look at Willy LaRue and you think of the fullback options that there are now. Is it time to move beyond Willy? Or is it, hang on a second, if two guys are down, say Agaza's down, Horn's not there, Apaleli Fassi is injured, Willy LaRue comes in, Kane Moody doesn't go to fullback, or he doesn't make the switches. Is that the hope he's still giving those players? Keep on playing. I'm not writing you off. The same with Abongi, but he's picked a lot of hookers. And obviously the same with Vincent Cock, because he's brought in some key youngsters as well. And you get a guy like Franz Malhaber, who people thought it could have been the end for him a year ago. He's back in the mix. What's your message to those three guys?
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure whether you've heard, but Rusty is actually going to be the main character in the next Bond film. It's going to be called Never Say Never. He is a guy who looks at everybody from all walks of life, all ages, all skills, all form. And like we saw Dion Fury go to the World Cup and play at hooker. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's tickets for Vincent. I wouldn't say it's tickets for Bongi or Willy. I think those guys, like you mentioned at the start, are guys that have been there, seen it, done it, know it. And you don't necessarily need to have them at the water cooler with these guys every opportunity. That opportunity is better spent, I suppose, on a youngster or mid-range guy who you kind of want to get a bit of a feel for. So I think it's a long shot for those guys, just based on their age. But as I said to you, I think the average age of this squad is way above what you're looking for at most World Cups. Most World Cup winning teams, I think, are in the late 20s, and this one's well over the 30s. And we've been talking about that for 2 years. But I get the feeling like Rusty's going to take Dad's army to the World Cup. And what I mean by that is he's got a massive group of over 30 players. And they're over 30 years old. He's got a massive group of those guys, and they're all grizzled veterans. And so, in a way, South Africa is perfectly positioned to absorb injuries. And not in a way where you have a guy go down, he's a 100-test veteran and a leader, and then you replace him with the Oak who's playing his third test. Because we've got such a wealth of experience at depth, we can take an older team, because if a player does get injured, you plug in that hole with a guy who's 34 but 75 test caps. So I think that may be the plan. It's fool's gold trying to, you know, predict what Rusty's going to do. But I'm not saying there won't be youngsters in the squad, but I'll be surprised if this squad is anywhere near the sort of average age of 28, 29. I think it's going to be an old squad. And I think he's looking at these youngsters because the injury rate in older guys, the recovery time is longer. The injury rate's probably a little bit higher. He's having a look at these youngsters for 2027 and beyond.
But he is aware of the history. And the old saying is the only thing that one learns from history is that one doesn't learn from history. And it's a fine line going from that 1 year pre the World Cup, especially if you've had a group of players together over 2-3 World Cups and they've been successful. We saw that with Australia, 1995. They were outstanding, building to 91 when they won it. By the time they got to 95, I know the games moved on from there. They just weren't the same side. Rob Andrews dropped goal, put them out in Newlands. Lucky to say I was there as well to watch it, okay? 95, them gone. Then we saw 2011, a combination of maybe a few older guys that you wonder if they weren't there, would South Africa have had a better chance despite Bryce Lawrence and a great Wallaby effort. You look at England in the past, they've taken, 2007, Andy Farrell. I mean, he was wrong end of 30 playing fluff in that opening game against us, being in the mix when Wilkerson came back and he went to centre for that World Cup final. And you've just looked at good teams that have just held on, the All Blacks as well, 2019, did that 2011-15, too many of those 2019 go into that tournament where they still beat us in the opening game. They won the third and fourth playoff comfortably. Their one game where they really were exposed, Eddie Jones, 19-7, he'd been waiting for 4 years to beat them away from home. They'd only had that one test, 16-15, at Twickenham in the rain, where you started wondering, okay, hang on a second, the graph could have turned for this New Zealand side. So when you look at Rusty's dad's army philosophy, is it not a case that this could be the last hurrah for those guys to win the greatest rivalry series. And you see the side that starts going to the Nations Championship. And there's been talk. Victor Matfield said, I've heard there's a B team. I think you and I have kind of agreed there is no such thing as a B team as such. There's maybe a team with less experience or less strength. Because we saw that the supposed B team beat Wales 73-0 and there were 20 players missing. And when we've seen them play in Italy with two different teams, there hasn't been a hell of a lot of difference in the scorelines. Generally speaking, Argentina the same. Could it be that so much focus has been put on those older guys, the war horses, the veterans? What we should be looking at is that second tier and saying that's who is planning on playing in 2027. But at the moment, he's happy that Zels is still number one in his position and Mark's number two. But I know in 18 months' time, Zels is going to be gone. It doesn't mean I'm not picking him today.
No, I think I think that's a great shot. I mean, absolutely. It could be a last hurrah in this series. we've kind of hinted towards that, though, for the last couple of seasons. Like, oh, is this the last time you're going to see these guys in action? And just when we thought the answer was yes, Faf de Klerk is back in the mix. So you never really know. You know, it is possible. I think it would be a wasted opportunity if we run on in the first playoff game at the next World Cup at 2027. And a bunch of those guys didn't play in this greatest rivalry series, you know? I think that would be a bit of a wasted opportunity, but that's just my opinion. I mean, Rusty will have thought about this far more deeply and investigated it. I think we're going to see a bit of a mix and match against New Zealand between age and experience, youth and experience. and I'm very keen to see which way this thing flows. But my gut feeling is that we are going to be old at the World Cup, but with plenty of experience across the entire squad.
A different World Cup, though. They've expanded the teams to try and make the game more global. Realistically, you know, there's 10 nations who on a given day could be competitive in a one-off. There's five that make the numbers, and now there's another five that is just to grow the game. So what could have been played in 2 weeks is now going to be played in 5 weeks when it comes to the World Cup. With the greatest respect to Italy, with the Springboks going to the World Cup, and Italy is your biggest game, till a potential quarterfinal against the All Blacks. That is the World Cup. You beat the All Blacks, you go and win that tournament. So in many respects, this we're going to have four cracks at the All Blacks. They're going to have four cracks at us. And the winner of that, because it's all set for them to play each other. One plays two in the quarterfinals. That's how World Rugby likes to do it. They like to eliminate the best teams. They put them all on the one side of the draw. Outrageous. Our World Cup could be about one game.
Exactly.
Win it, you win the World Cup. Lose it, you come home beaten in the quarterfinals, spot out of the playoffs.
Yeah,
we saw what he did with Ethan Hooker last year. We came and saying, how's he not playing against Italy? How's he not playing against Georgia? He got on for 20 minutes against Italy, made a great tackle first up, and that was the end of him. How's it not happening? And then he unleashed him in New Zealand against the All Blacks, saying the only thing that's going to get bigger than this is a World Cup final or World Cup playoff game. And the guy flourished. So we know Rusty keeps back. Sometimes he puts guys out there. Kubis Vlisi, he picked him at 8 against Georgia and then basically never played him again. And now he's back in the mix. You talk about Faf de Klerk coming back. Herschel Yankees, Bayon, interest in selection. No Embrace Papir. Now, quantify that for me in terms of messaging. The one guy leaves, takes up a lucrative contract in Bayon, and he's played started 7 out of 15 games this season. The other guy has been red hot for two seasons now with the Bulls, and he's not in the mix. But two veterans, one in Japan, one in France, are picked. How do you interpret that?
That is an interesting call. That is a very interesting call. I don't know. I mean, there's no doubt that Embro is having a breakout season. Absolutely fabulous season, playing great rugby. And you're starting to see the best of him. So I don't think that's escaped Rusty's eye. I just think it's possible that he's looking at his depth chart at scrum off and thinking, okay, this is the kind of order of the guys that I've got. You know, I've got Kubis Reinach, I've got Jaden Hendricks, I've got Grant Williams. Very few of those guys are spring chickens. You've got Hashim Peed coming through in the mix. Herschel's, I think, 29 now. It's quite an old group. So, and I don't think Ambrose brings that average age down at all either. So I just wonder whether Rusty's eye isn't on looking at a guy like Hashim Peed and trying to find a useful element to the scrum off room and then just as a backup, you know, for now and for the future. So Herschel back, I suppose what you could put in the ticks column for Herschel is that he's played some very big games in some very hostile places and got great results for the box. And he was also there in terms of the genesis of this Bok team under Rassie and understands grassroots where it came from. Embrose, I suppose, would be on a more of a learning curve with the box, but you can't doubt the guy's speed and explosiveness and his current form. So to me, that is a very interesting omission. Probably I would have taken Embrose over Pfaff at this point, but that's Rassie's prerogative and he'll have plenty of reasons for why he did it.
No, no, look. And I think for discussion, a debate, we all have an opinion.
Yeah.
Everyone who watches this show, every rugby fan has an opinion. Rassie Rassman lives and dies by his decisions, and they haven't been too bad.
Yeah.
Two rugby championships, two World Cups, a British and Irish Lions series. It doesn't mean we can't have the discussion. It doesn't mean that every selection is an absolute. I'm talking about one player leaves this country.
Mm.
And gets called back for the national side. There's reward on both sides, financially, and then he still plays the national team. The other guys in this country really playing well. Is it a style thing? Is it that they want a different type of player? Or do you see Embrace Papi being very different to the players in the mix or very similar?
I think Embrose is a lot like Grant Williams. He brings a massive speed element to his game and adds massive value there in terms of the attack and being able to cover and being an extra body in the kicking game. Obviously, a guy like Pfaff historically is an absolute nugget on defense, reckless, throws his body around and is a unit in the tackle and is a feisty, you know, a feisty kind of scrum off. So he's quite unique in that sense. You know, and maybe Rassie's decided that from a speed perspective, he's got Kobus Reinach, he's got Grant Williams, and that's all that he needs for now. I don't know. But I mean, Embrose does bring a specific skill set and it's at an elite level. He's rapid.
Right. But I mean, there's something for Embrose when he comes. He didn't play against, he was a late withdrawal against the Stormers and you could see they felt it.
Mm.
They really missed him. He's been in outstanding form and he's combined well with Andre Pollard. I actually also thought there the fact that he's playing with Pollard, who's
an obvious
selection.
Yeah.
They're playing together all season. Reminding people again, there's going to be more alignment camps before the season starts, and that season starts against the Barbarians at Nelson Mandela Bay Stadium. The warm-up game will be SAA against the Zim Sables. Zim Sables going to their first World Cup since 1991.
Yep.
So there's going to be huge opportunity. Rassie's used on average 50-plus players for the last 2 years. Don't be surprised if that goes past 60 players, maybe even as close as 70 players, given that they're 13 tests and there's one non-international against the Barbarians. And they play everywhere, home and away.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep on saying there is talk that he'll mix and match, especially for the Nations Championship. Put guys in a cauldron in Dublin, put them in Paris, and that kind of stands him in good stead. And we know that he's never been afraid to potentially drop a game to get a bigger reward with one or two players.
Mm.
So kind of we understand that and we bank that. The discussion, the debate doesn't mean it stops.
Mm.
You look at a guy like Toki Augustus, Jano Augustus, was faltering at Western Province and the Stormers, came out of the under-20s, huge reps. And then injuries, lack of form, conditioning, went to Northampton and was just outstanding. Started 15 out of 19 matches for Northampton last season, got nearly a player of the match award in Northampton's incredible win against Leinster, Investec Champions Cup semi-final at the Aviva. Then unfortunately it got injured in the build-up to the final and didn't play. Selected for Rassie's squad to start the season last year. Everyone, this is the second coming of Troki. It's brilliant. Yep. He's on the move to Ulster to follow in the footsteps of the late Pedri Vandenberg, Dwayne Vermeulen, who are outstanding there. And he doesn't get a medical clearance. And Rassie says that's the reason he can't bring him in. Well, he got the medical clearance or he's there and he's playing. He's now played 9 games for Ulster. He's played 2 in the Challenge Cup. He's played 7 in the URC. His last game in 2025 was the 27th of December. He got injured. He came back last Friday and I played 80 minutes against Edinburgh. Player of the match. Huge reps. A lot of media around him. Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And Rassie announces the virtual 21 player overseas base squad and he's not in it.
Mm.
What has changed between this time last year and now that he's not in the mix.
No, another surprising omission, I would say. I mean, I've been on the Trukki bandwagon for a long time. I think he closely fits what Jasper Visser does. I mean, he's in the Premiership, he's in the 95th percentile for post-contact meters and 95th percentile for dominant tackles. So he for me, very much fits what Jasper Visser does. I couldn't tell you his work rate, you know, his efforts off the ball. But yeah, that is an interesting omission. He is a thumper. He's an oak who goes forward on both sides of the ball, and to me that is that mirrors what Jasper Visser brings. I mean, Jasper's not the quickest oak around the field, but he's physical and powerful in contact, and Trukki does exactly the same thing. So Trukki is a guy who would be a like for like switch in my mind. Even if that's not the kind of eight that I would pick, if that's what you're looking for, then Trukki is a guy that should absolutely be in the mix.
Well, we look at these selections and we say, one, perseverance, don't lose hope to these players.
Mm-hmm.
We take Jordan Hendrickson. Two and a half seasons ago, he was very much talked about as one of the fly-off solutions, as who succeeds or who's the backup to Andre Pollard. It was just before Sasha started coming through and Jordan Hendrickson was in the mix. Boom. Then he wasn't in the top eight fly-offs being looked at. I still remember having a chat to Rusty and he's like, what are you on about, man? How can you kind of even read that much into an alignment camp? And then the next year he said to me, I'll just pick everyone and you can't complain. Okay? but Hendrickson went from basically not being in the initial alignment camp to starting the opening test of the season against Wales at Wembley and then being replaced for the last 20 minutes by Sasha and basically being in that mix. And they sent him to play a couple of games, two tournaments with the Sevens to kind of show him you're still on the radar. So I keep on saying there is hope. What does it say for a guy like, and you work with him every week, Johnny Roach, who was initially a surprise selection to the lineman camp last year, and now he's not in. Has he potentially moved to saying to Zimbabwe Sables, I am available because I know they want to pick him? Or is it that a bit of a surprise omission when you think he was a year younger last year? I know he's had injuries and now he's not in the mix.
I mean, he's a fantastic prospect. I rate Johnny very highly. So that is another one, another interesting omission. But like we said at the top, you can't invite everybody to this camp. We could draw up a list of probably 200 guys that we rate as players who are not in this group. And so, yeah, I think, you know, whether you get picked and then not picked or not picked and then picked, you can't read too much into it either way because, as you've just mentioned, Rusty really does, it's not that he flip-flops, but he looks at all of these guys. So he doesn't need to have a player at every single camp to get to know that guy. He brings him to a camp to get to know him, makes a couple of notes, and then moves on to having a look at somebody else. It doesn't mean he's been written off. And just because you get invited to the most recent camp before the test season kicks off doesn't mean that you are 100% in the mix. I think Rusty is just doing his due diligence on each player. So I think Johnny Roach has got massive upside. I think he'd be a huge, huge player for the Sables, and hopefully we don't lose him to Zim, and he's part of the Bok mix.
Well, I mean, Rusty also, like, I mean, him and his team, they have access to data that none of us have. They follow certain players more closely than others. Kai Pratt being an example, they recognize him earlier. They recognize Ollie Reed early in terms of what they wanted to see. Zach Porthen took him on tour, kind of with Wilco Lowe in that mix, working with Don Heeman. No one would have thought at 21 they'd pick him and give him a couple of test matches. So they are definitely, like you say, those props are plus 30s, and they've got that second tier, early, early 20s, saying we're looking after the next decade as well. Hooker, Robbie's reinvented himself. You got Malcolm Marks, obviously. I mean, he's just without comparison, I would say, in the international game as a hook, and how he just continues to grow. We forget how young he is,
yep,
how much he's done, and just how good being in Japan has been for his rugby. But when I look at everything, the question I still ask is, who is an absolute to replace an injured Eben Etzebeth or an Eben Etzebeth that you think he's only got 40 minutes left in the legs come 2027? I'm not just talking about the greatest rivalry tour. So four lock would be something for me. It's open cards, eh? Someone go and break down the door. Where's the 21-year-old Eben running over a Bismarck?
Totally.
I don't see that in our country at the moment. Totally. So that's the one position.
Mm-hmm.
And then I look, our winners, Curtly, Aaron, Sanchez, and Colby. Wow. You can't fault them for anything. Is that still the way we're going to go with a Damian Williams at fullback? Or is an Edwin van der Merwe a like for like? Or is a Kane and Moody being seen as a 13 or 14 or 11? Or if Sebastian de Klerk is to break in, where does he break in? Where's Cheswell Yuster come in? Where do these guys play? And do we get a situation where, shock horror, Damien Pinot has been dropped out of the French team. The 21-year-old kid from Power replaces him, scores 5 tries, makes 2 assists, and no one's talked about Damien Pinot during the Six Nations. Is Rassi kind of, is there that ruthless edge that he would make a call like that and say, I'm picking so-and-so ahead of an established World Cup star because just on form, they're better at the moment.
No, absolutely. I think when it gets to the sharp end of sort of the run into that World Cup, he's going to do whatever it takes to win. That's Rassi's MO. So I think that's definitely a possibility. I think every one of those players you mentioned is a superstar option on the wing. I think that if you don't retire on your own terms, you get replaced by a youngster eventually. That's regardless of how good you are. Christian Cullen, if he tried to play till he was 40, that's how it would have ended for him. So, yeah, it's just about when. You know, when do you call time? Obviously, Chesney and Kirtley are still in their prime, still playing great footy and deadly finishes. But for me, guys like Cheswell Yuster, very, very exciting prospect for the future. Massive speed element, punches above his weight. Has got all the traits that we like in Cheslin and in Curtly Aronson. So it's just about when do you bring those guys through. So it's about getting the timing right to make sure that you're bringing a guy who's young and bulletproof and adds value and so that he's experienced by the time you get to the World Cup without throwing away the value of the experience you have in the double World Cup winners.
Right, and then noticeable from that 21, the virtual, Lucky Am, Lokanya Am, nice to see him back in the
very
mix. And I mean, Rassi's saying for him and the Faf de Klerks, they haven't been in the mix for a while. They're World Cup winners. They've proven that messaging to say, I still think there's something in the legs for you. Japan may have been the change of pace from Durban that he needed.
Mm.
So a positive reinforcement there. When you look at the overseas-based players, 2 uncapped players in Saudi and Funimesh from Northampton, 16 World Cup winners. A couple of boys recalled who have gone over in the last 2 years, kind of taken up overseas contracts, but also kills off this thing that you leave and it's killing our game locally. It's not killing the Springboks because he's picked 49 players in an alignment camp here that are locally based. And basically 16 of his 21 he's picked from overseas, there's only 2 new caps. So for all the hundreds of South African players playing, it's also a case of local is lacquer. He's coming here first to pick his Springbok squad.
Yeah, I think it's also an evolution because you've got a bunch of guys who kind of went overseas when the Boks weren't at their best and made a career for themselves. And Rassi, his sort of the evolution of the Rassi tenure began with, hey, we're going to recall overseas-based players. We are going to pick them. So I think that's part of that story. I don't know whether that's going to be a recurring trend indefinitely. I think the volume of players playing overseas, and if you look at the quality, certainly the URC is a great breeding ground for Springboks. And I think it makes sense that Rassi looks there for his talent. But by the same token, as you pointed out, it's good for South African rugby to have a section of our players playing abroad because it just expands the depth chart and the player pool that's available to Rassi. He's seen guys in action in first-class rugby. Instead of just having 4 teams of 23 players in action every week, he's effectively got an extra 60-plus players mucking about overseas who are on his radar.
But when you pick 70, it makes for great debate, but it's also kind of seriously challenges the thinking about 23, 23, 23 and what combinations. And I know that he's working towards a thing that he's not putting a 23 out against whichever country at the World Cup and they've never played together. His thing is they have to have played test match rugby. I like the fact that he included Riley Norton, who's been outstanding with the under-20s, who hopefully will be able to win Sanzar's rugby championship. They weren't that good when they played last season, but then they went and won the big one, which was the World Cup. Marcus is in there, Marcus Miller, and I think he potentially could play for the Springboks this year. I mean, he's in the under-20 ranks now. He'll go to that tournament. We'd love to see him in the Stormers before the end of the season. Just give him a crack, you know, and just see what he's got. You know, good enough is old enough. And then obviously Kai Pratt with the under-20s. Those are the only three real big under-20 names, and they're still under 18, those guys. Marcus Miller is. That you could see going through to the next world. It's going to take something. It's going to take a Jonah Loma to pitch up next year and then actually break down the door. So there's going to be plenty of debate around that. Is there anyone in that overseas 21 or in the 49 here, anyone? Like we've mentioned, an Ambrose, a Trocky, a Johnny Roach. Is there anyone that you've looked at and thought, I'm surprised that that guy didn't get a hello?
Yeah, I mean we've mentioned most of the guys that are not in the mix who are obvious choices for that. I think a guy like Andre Hikofenta at the Stormers, the hooker, I think is probably a little bit underrated. He's a guy who deserves a sniff there for sure. If you look at the quality of his carries and the work that he's done this season, definitely. I mean there's just so many great players in this country. You could go through a list of guys that don't sort of spring to mind, but if you think about it, like a guy like PJ Buerter, the hooker at the Lions, has really come on in leaps and bounds this year, made massive improvements there. There's just so many good players, and you just can't have everybody at these alignment camps. So the door's still wide open. I'm telling you now, if a guy performs, I mean, Renzo Duplessis got into the mix based on what he did in the Curry Cup and is a bright talent, you know, and I think the door is definitely not closed on a guy like that.
Well, if you look at, I mean, we played around with a few stats thanks to the United Rugby Championships stats page, and looked at what is the influence decks in URC with South African players. How do they compare with the rest of the tournament? Different teams you're playing for. I mean, the guy could make the most tackles, but he plays in a team that doesn't win, so he's bound to make the most tackles. Yeah. But over 12 rounds, you get a sense of, especially an all-round capability. You've been raving about Sebastian de Klerk. 41 defenders beaten, 607 meters, 17 clean breaks, 15 offloads. Now, he's injured. He got injured in the 37th minute. The Bulls did miss him. You can see why he's in the mix, even though you're not necessarily going to pick him ahead of a Kurt Lee or pick him ahead of
Cheslin.
A bit ahead of Cheslin. He's a good player. Chris Smith, not in the Bok equation, but just he's nearly 2,000 kick meters away, controls the game. 92 points, first in the charts, 25 conversions, 14 penalties, accuracy, how he's helped Krappies, Morne van der Berg, just what he's brought to that. So there's also a thing where you get very good provincial players who are not going to make the step up, or that kind of boat has, that ship has sailed, but are still very good in the URC. Kieran Horn, 2,529 kick meters, 494 attack meters, 96 carries, 13 offloads. That's like a silent assassin at the back. You also raved about him a lot 2 years ago. He's a guy who never really gets mentioned. So will we bring Billy back, Wambi? But how good is this kid?
No, totally. I mean, I think it's specific to how the Lions play their rugby, but he's definitely central to what they do there. And Rusty has had his eye on him for a bit. I think it just comes down to the debate. Are you looking for a guy at 15 who's going to be your sort of backup first receiver and your playmaker, or are you looking for a guy who controls it from the back and puts his boot into action? So depending on what decision you make there will affect the kind of player you select there. And that may have something to do with why Kieran hasn't sort of been featured as much as he'd like to be, but a very, very good player.
And then one that I actually thought may get a little sneaky, even though he's turned 30 and kind of had that fascinating career, was going to give up rugby a couple of years ago. And then Arcus said to him, oh, come to the Bulls. He had been at the Cheetahs, a bit of a cult hero, Jandre Rudolph, 16 turnovers won, 112 tackles, elite jackal defensive workload. Keep on playing. You never know. He could be at the next alignment camp. A bit of a kind of a mix between Mossy and Sos and Quagga in terms of what he's offered. Then, like you said, Andre Hikofenta has just been outstanding in all his facets of play this season. He's carried well. Line-out throwing's improved a lot. Scrumming well. So don't lose hope there either. And then Achia Snyman overseas, we know just how well he's done. 20 offloads, playing for Leinster. Poor Munster must wonder, what happened? Those 4 years he was there, he played like 20 games.
Yeah.
He's just been a superstar for Leinster. A guy who's obviously had a little bit of heat on him, Sasha Feinberg, Mgoma Zulu, 62 points, over 2,000 kick meters. You're like that. 70 kicks in play, 10 clean breaks, lots of defenders beaten. We keep on talking the game management's going to come with experience, but individually he's done some great things already in the competition. Incredible. My favorite, obviously, Evan Rus. Lots of carries, 6 tries, lots of mistakes, but it's because he's trying. Glad to see perseverance. Trocky, Evan Rus is in that alignment camp. Okay, he got there. And then your favorites, Vincent Chituka, the line-out steel king disruptor. Yep. And then outside of that top 10, just on stats and that, Vanderkok playing for Ulster. It's been good. Breaks, offloads, tries. Grobbies for the Bulls at hooker, lineouts and tries. Ruan Fent, who's come back from injury, carries and tries. And then Paulie de Villiers, tackles and turnovers. He is definitely, he's in the frame, he's in the mix. And I think it's a matter of when he plays for the Springboks, not if.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Guy, you haven't mentioned Sipho Mnebeleli, I believe is how you pronounce his surname. Youngster from the under-20s. He's at the Bulls, hooker. Absolute hitman. I'm not sure this is going to be his season, but he's a guy who's definitely going to come through, in my opinion, and I think he's going to be one to watch.
All right, so it is URC weekend. I've got 4 from 4, por favor. It's nice to say that again. It's URC. It's all 4 South African teams at home. And when all 4 South African teams at home, you've got to say it's 4 from 4. I've got the Stormers to beat the Dragons on Sunday at 3 o'clock kickoff, and I've got them to win by 25 comfortable points. 40-15 is my score. And then I've got the Lions to knock over in a high-scoring game, 38-30, Edinburgh. I got the Bulls to put Cardiff away, 35-20, 15 points. And I got probably the match of the weekend, Munster traveling against the Sharks. I got a 29-21 win for the Sharkies, 8 points. And you say we don't love you, but we do. Where are you going with your 4?
Mate, I will say that I think the Bulls will win their game against Cardiff, 30-15. That's the prediction I've got. Cardiff have only won 7 of 17 games in South Africa. They own 4 against the Bulls. They'll be looking for their first win there. For the Munster game with the Sharks, I've got the Sharks to win that one, 30-23. They're 11-2-6 against South African teams, but in South Africa, 4-2-4. So they break even. Yeah, they're a good travelling side. Haven't beaten the Sharks at Kings Park yet. Edinburgh, I think the Lions win that one by roughly 20 points. I'm going to say 35-15. And then obviously I'm backing the Stormers to win. I'll take 1-point victory. I think if you look at the record book, Dragons have never won in South Africa or against South African teams. And in South Africa, they own 8. So I'm going to say the Stormers to win that by 12.
By 12?
By 12.
It's very conservative.
Very, mate.
You know that you beat the Bulls by double digits.
I do know that, mate.
Away from home.
Yeah. 40-28.
You guys are keeping expectation low.
40-28.
And 40-28, you're giving them 28 points. Yeah. What does Norman Laker say about that?
Normie loves me. That's, soft pass.
That's 4 tries they'll score against
that's
you. They'll
right,
get a bonus point.
That's right. That's right.
You think so? Well,
I don't know, mate. We'll see.
Well, we'll see what you say to Norman afterwards. Eh?
I'll say, well done. We won again.
Eh? Well done. And well done for restricting them to just the 1 try and 2 penalties.
Correct.
I've got the Stormers to win well, get there, 3 o'clock kickoff, and then there is the Stormers at 23 are playing. After that, it's loaded with the reserve depth. There's a couple of like 7 oldies. Only 4 can start. The SA Under 23 competition starts this weekend as well. And I think it's a great competition. So it's a good weekend of URC. We've got 2 weekends of URC, and then we enter the Vastic Champions Cup quarterfinals and last 16 and then quarterfinals. That's first and second week of April. 6 Nations has come and gone. France have won in the most dramatic way. It would be amiss of me, Zels, not to honor an individual from the 6 Nations.
Antoine Dupont, surely.
With the Steco,
ooh, Hybrid Power Tools Hero Award,
it's got to be drum roll. Duan van der Merwe.
No, it's not.
but he has been a great servant for Scotland. It's not Antoine Dupont. Eddie Jones says he's not the player he was, and I actually agree with Eddie. Anyone who comes back from a serious knee takes a year to 2 to get right, or they don't really ever have 100% of what they had. He's still a great player. But I agree with Eddie, and I agree with Eddie on a lot of things.
You're going Caelan Doris.
I also agreed with Eddie when he said there's no way he will take a Wallaby team to the World Cup. And he said, we won't go out in the quarterfinals. He was great. He didn't tell them that meant they won't get to the quarterfinals. So they never got out of the pool stages. But Eddie with Japan. So it's not Antoine Dupont.
Ben Ulls.
It's not Ben Ulls. It's not Ben Hull at all, but I do like Ben Hull. We'll see him in Johannesburg. It's not Manichella either, though I do like him.
Who are you going with, mate? Tell us.
Mate,
tell us.
Only because I get
the
to
obvious
say,
choice.
Only because I get to say his name, Carl Steyn. No. It's Louis Bierbiri.
Oh, fantastic.
Bordeaux.
Great choice.
29 tries in 27 test matches. He's only 22 years old. Why he is the hybrid? Because a hybrid would say it's a dual role. Let's Oak featured prominently in the top 3 to 4 in 10 categories. Next best was Thomas Ramos, 8. Jalibert, the 10, in 7, and he missed one game. And then your favorite, Stuart McCloskey, Ireland, also Big 12, 7. DuPont's up there, 6. Thomas Williams, the Lone Ranger for Wales, he's in 6. Mananchalo, 6. Basically all against England that day, okay?
Yeah.
Ben all 4 and Carl Steyn 4. Those were the guys with the multi-category leaders. But Louis Bierbiri, look, he is an early contender for World Player of the Year. He was in the mix last year. And I think had France beaten South Africa in Paris, he would have got the award. They didn't. And it was rightly so that a Malcolm Marx and a Sasha up there should have, you know, also in the conversation. But Louis Bierbiri, what a wonderful, wonderful rugby player. Allez le bleu, my friend.
No, mate, he is absolutely sensational. Great finishing ability. Just the way he sees the field and what he does in sort of unstructured attack, like his ability to just break it open and go is just phenomenal. I think he started out as a fly-off. So his whole thing around sort of reading the field, understanding the shape of where the back three is going and what's coming next. I think he's ahead of the game, and I think that really does help him. Absolutely phenomenal talent. I'm a little bit against wingers winning these kind of awards, mate, but he is outstanding.
But over and above his 9 tries, which is a record, he's only player to ever score every match in 2 successive Six Nations.
Wow.
He scored incredible. 18 tries in 14 Six Nations matches. And as we said earlier in the week, Brian O'Driscoll, the Irish great outside centre, holds the record of 26 tries in 65 matches, which is great for a midfielder.
Big time.
And it shows you a lot of winners either weren't playing any very good attacking sides or they didn't stick around for too long. But he's also made 4 try assists and done serious work off the ball.
No, he's proper.
You know, but he just looks so fluid. He's explosive, but he's fast as well, okay? Mm. And he never dies with the ball. His first instinct is to step inside, keep the ball alive, and that's what I love about him. Even some of those tries where he got ankle tapped or he tripped, he got up and still beat the cover defense to score. So just a wonderful representation of everything that's good about French rugby, everything that's good for them about the Six Nations. And even when it all went wrong at Murrayfield, he was still managing to get on the scoreboard and do some damage. So that's, we never have to talk about the Six Nations again this year. We only talk about these 6 individual nations when they play in the Nations Championship. And the whole thing is, can anyone stop them? Yes, they call the Springboks, they call the All Blacks, and to a degree, they called Argentina. I don't quite know about Australia away from home, but definitely at home, they can stop them.
Yeah.
Going into our final segment of what has been a glorious show. it's a surprise that you're a DHS All Boy, eh?
Yeah, I actually had a mate from Panta Boys High drop a message on there. Great to hear from him and brought up some great memories. So, yeah, interesting. Interesting the comments that came through there on that show. It was a notable absence of all those Bulls guys who said they couldn't wait for the Monday to talk about their Bulls victory over the Stormers.
It was incredible when we said quite convincingly and confidently and by double digits that the Stormers would win. And I looked at some of the comments. It was mocking faces. It was up yours. It was like, oh, horror. And consistently, and not just on the YouTube comments, but got messages on my inbox and said, can't wait for the show. Can't wait for you to apologize. Actually can't wait for anything. Those guys seem to have taken the week off.
Yeah. But
haven't seen them, okay, whatsoever. And you know what? If the Bulls had beaten the Stormers, we would have been here, taken it on the chin and said, kudos, well played. So if you're going to throw it, mate, you got to take it.
That's great life advice.
Exactly. But yeah, once again, if you don't know and you've been away, the Stormers pumped the Bulls, okay, at Loftus. And I'll tell you, there was a time where you could say the Bulls had the nicer jersey, but that doesn't apply anymore. Because they back.
It's personal.
Blue and white, black shorts, and the old traditional socks. The heritage that will always be Western Cape, Western Province, but they are now the Stormers. All their teams call that. But it starts at schoolboy level. There was this great upset last week. Stellenberg beat Paarl Gymnasium, Paarl Gym, for the first time ever, 2019. And Paarl Gym is now playing Durbanville, just round the corner again. And I asked you beforehand, where do they stay on the Friday night of a game, the Paarl Gym Oaks, before they play Stellenberg and Durbanville? They stay at home because most of them come from there, okay? It's just now they can go to Stellenberg and they can go to Durbanville and they've got good. And Maurice Joubert is involved also at Durbanville. He's been one of the guys, played a big part in the last 5 years. And the interesting thing there, like 5 years ago, the first team of Sachs beat Durbanville's first team 102-0. And the very next year, the 2 years later, they lost to Durbanville. And it shows you in cycles and what was coming with the under 15 and the 16 ranks. So lots happening out there in the northern suburbs. We know the Paarl schools, and we obviously know the southern suburb schools, the big four, as they call them here. Didn't go so well for them in the Western Province opening schools day. Zell's had to educate you on this. It's take 20 minutes aside, only tries, no convergence, everything World Rugby wants. I don't think they had scrums either or lineouts. And the scores with this, Stellenberg beat their mates from Belva 40-0. That's only in 20 minutes aside. Lundbo lost to Bishops 25-20, maybe because they didn't quite know how to get out of the farm. Molderton, they lost to Durbanville 35. Paarl Gym beat Sachs 35. We'll get past that one quickly. Paul Boyzai beat Rondebosch 25. And Paul Riss 15-5 against Wynberg. So I think Wynberg will be the strongest of the southern suburb schools, and then obviously the Paarl schools. And then this weekend, the big game is Paul Roos against Uffies. That's the primary big one in the country, and that's played in Stellenbosch.
I'd love to know how many yellow cards there were in those tries-only games, because if you're defending, why wouldn't you just absolutely lie all over the ball? And if you are, if that's the way those games are going, and there are lots of yellow cards, what is the constructive value of that? Are we coaching kids now to just play to win yellow cards against the opponent? I don't know. I'd love to know.
Well, it's festival. It's like an introduction. It's a launch of the season. And I mean, you do it a lot. It could be six touch.
But that's the thing though, is when you play with no penalties, it's like say you only score a goal if you hit the top right corner. You can have a lot of shots over the crossbar there. But interesting.
But why this kind of thing is always relevant, Ross Vincent plays Ethy number 8.
Yes.
He only ever played one game for the first team of Bishops, and it was at that, then it was Newlands. It was at that Newlands day against Paarl Gymnasium. He started for the first time in his life, he started on the flank. He had been a 9, a 10, 11, a 12, and a 15 for Bishops' second team the year before that. They said, let's try you in the loose forwards. He started on loose forwards. They lost that game. COVID came. Basically, everything shut down for a year. Italy found out he had his grandfather was from Sicily, and he's now played a 20-odd test for Italy at number 8 and looked very big and very good. So I know they feed them lots of pasta over there. Not quite the pasta that gets fed in Georgia, but they feed them. Great Cottage Monument. That's a massive one as well. And all the schools festivals we'll be talking about, I'm going through, I'm scrolling through. I just want to thank schoolboyrugby.co.za for highlighting all these wonderful school derbies. Follow them if you want to scores. If you go to SA Rugby Magazine, there's always a wrap, a wonderful wrap, like they do the SAFA wrap of players overseas. Zells, it's been a pleasure. Please register. You were the ex-editor of SA Rugby Magazine. Please register all your details. I know you change your phone number a lot. You now qualify for the 100,000 prize because you no longer work for SA Rugby.
Promise me I'm getting that money.
Mate, I'm telling you publicly, we've got to put on a show. 100,000 Rand. End of June, we announce the winner. It's going to be a great winner. We've got great sponsors on board. Burger King's come on board. So, hey, there could be lots in it for you in terms of giveaways as well. Steco expanding their relationship with us.
Beautiful.
Think power tools, think hybrid. And obviously, if you're very thirsty, always think Castle Lager.